Chapter 18. Aspen. After some brief farewells, Aspen and Tessel quickly traveled to the guardhouse near the tannery. The traveler, who seemed a bit nervous about being alone with Aspen for the first time since he'd killed her in her previous incarnation, as a reluctant enemy, spoke very little. She was, however, clearly grateful when he passed her a mask shortly after they entered the aromatic zone near the factory, and she even offered him a tentative smile before donning the black fabric covering. Vaughn had been stationed at the empty building across the street from the guardhouse. Many buildings had been left vacant following Lich Lord Akuji's attacks, and though many of them had acquired new occupants, mostly non-human, this area still had many abandoned lots. In fact, once Aspen began looking, he noticed that they passed almost no one who was anything other than completely human. The two dwarves and one orc he did see were clearly employed as guards for a single human merchant, and all three kept wary hands on the weapons at their sides. A few blocks before the corner where the guardhouse stood, Aspen dropped into a dark alley he had noted on his magical map, and followed its winding path as it narrowed to little more than 2 feet of extra space between one building and the next. Finally, he heard a crunch from behind him and turned around, scraping his shoulders on the walls as he did. Tessel, who had been trailing him at enough of a distance that they hoped they didn't seem to be together, was jammed against the walls behind him. Her feet scrabbled at the ground as she tried to maneuver her bulky armor and her broad shoulders through the space, to no avail. Her expression, what he could see of it between her horned helm and the black mask, was embarrassed but determined. Gently, he reached out and touched her shoulder, causing her to still and stare at him with wide blue eyes. "Can you remove your armor, as Rouge and Mott do?" he murmured softly, hoping no one in the buildings around them would suspect anything more interesting than a particularly large rat was invading their space. Jerkily, the half-dwarf nodded, and a moment later she dropped a good 2 inches as her heavy boots and plate vanished, leaving her in a pretty periwinkle dress that complemented her flaxen hair and made her eyes seem almost violet. Aspen smiled as reassuringly as he could, hoping she could see approval in his eyes. He cupped his hands in front of him and crouched so that the woman who, in her current form of a half-dwarf shield maiden, stood barely 5 feet tall, could set one slippered foot in his hands. "I thought this might happen," Aspen whispered, "but we're only a few buildings away now. I'll lift you up on the roof, and then follow myself. I think there may be a hole in the roof of the old house we're heading for." Nodding, Tessel allowed herself to be lifted, gingerly bracing her hands on his shoulders for support. He raised her up carefully, noting that in spite of the solid muscle of her short form, she wasn't too heavy for him to lift easily. "Ready?" Her fingers tightened momentarily on his shoulders, but then she let go, standing in a crouch on the platform of his palms. He dropped his hands, then shoved up. He looked up, watching her feet travel through the air, and readied himself to catch her if she didn't manage to grab the lip of the roof that was only a foot or so over her head. He heard a grunt as the short woman came to rest on the wooden roof above him, but he must have gotten the amount of force he needed right, since she didn't seem to be scrabbling for a grip, nor had she landed with enough force to fall through into the building below. He reached out with his life sense, noting that the only occupant of the building they were climbing onto seemed uninterested in finding out what might be going on outside, since they hadn't moved toward the front door. A dark shadow blocked his view of the stars as Tessel stuck her head out from the rooftop. He saw movement, and a heavy coil of rope dropped down beside him. Thankful again for travelers and their seemingly infinite storage, Aspen tugged at the rope, which held firm against his weight. His original plan had been to walk up the wall with his back on one side and feet on the other, but he was no Rouge, so he was glad he wouldn't have to put that plan to use. Aspen quickly clambered up the rope, emerging at the top to find that Tessel had found a solid rafter to stand on, then re-donned her heavy armor. The rope was tied firmly around her middle, and she seemed an immovable anchor. He saluted her gratefully, and her eyes smiled back at him as the rope vanished again, along with her armor. Apparently, she too was wary of putting any unnecessary weight on the flimsy roofing material. The old house that was their goal was indeed only 30 or 40 feet away. It was distinguished not only by the fact that there was only empty space after it, but also by the gaping hole in the roof, with torn shingles and shattered beams bearing silent witness to the likely fate of the former residents. That hole had been clearly visible on his map, and he'd told Vaughn that's how they'd likely enter, so the elf shouldn't stab them when they drop through. Pointing to their goal, Aspen gestured for Tessel to lead the way, which she did with surprising grace. She tested each step carefully, and he made certain to follow exactly where she led. Without any further excitement, they were able to lower themselves down through the dark hole, where his life sense told him the young elf awaited them. Bond's voice was quiet but eager as it came from the darkness. "There's only one of them left. The boy you sent with me this afternoon put the knife into an empty house on the map, as you instructed, and one of the guards came out to get it as soon as it grew dark. He went somewhere but you told me not to follow, so I stayed here." His usually gentle voice was frustrated, and Aspen could see his lifelight moving restlessly as he shifted from one foot to the other. Aspen nodded. "That confirms that they're part of this, as we suspected. That's all we needed to know for now. Rouge and her team are investigating the maskers, and with your racial debuff against dexterity while you're in the city, you would have been at too great a risk of being discovered. If anything happened, you would have vanished, and in all likelihood, we'd never even have found your body." The elf growled softly, the sound animalistic in the darkness. "I know, but they might also have led me to my sister and my nephew." Aspen sighed, moving forward now that his eyes had adjusted as much as they could to the near darkness in the room. "Trust Rouge. She'll find your family if they're still alive. There was no way anyone not human could pass as a masker, but we have our own mission tonight. It's even possible we'll learn more than our friends." Bond sighed as well, and the faint flickers of color limning his spirit shifted from red to a deep orange. "I know, it has been hard just waiting here." Aspen grinned. "Then let's stop waiting." The first step to their plan was to empty the guardhouse of guards. If Vaughn was correct, and there was only one guard left inside, this should be fairly easy with a little minor assistance. Aspen walked to the nearest window and carefully hung a brown cloth from the sill. It was barely visible, but anyone looking for it could tell it was there simply because of the way it fluttered in the soft evening breeze. Plum's host of urchins, many of whom were long familiar with life on the harsh streets of Bright, included a young man who went by the name of Jiminy. He was, like most of the others, slender to the point of being skinny, and his nondescript looks and indeterminate age led to him being dismissed as unimportant if one happened to notice him at all. Jiminy, however, had a rather unusual skill. Apparently, his family, before they became just a few of the many casualties of the Battle of Bright, had been actors. They had not only taught the boy how to read, but also how to speak in many different tones and accents. The child had played many of the smaller roles in their productions, and one day he learned to throw his voice. His family had been in the process of figuring out how best to make use of this talent when they died. After that, Jiminy had quickly learned to use it to distract enemies and marks alike. Now at the age of 11 or 12, Jiminy's voice often went from treble to tenor clef in a single sentence, but his skill was finely honed and extremely useful. Thus it was that nearly as soon as the cloth went out the window, a woman's shriek was heard from down the street, even as someone banged on the door of the guardhouse. "Help! Help! Please someone help my family! Our home is afire! Please someone save my baby! I'll give you anything but please! You must come!" The wailing voice was cracked and terrified, and a moment later, a heavy-jowled face emerged as the door cracked open. Seeing no one, the guard scowled. "Who's that?" The man grunted, looking around suspiciously. Now the woman's voice came from some shadows further down the street, where a dark figure seemed to move restlessly. "Oh, good sir guard. You must assist me. I could not wake my husband, and my babe lay down the hall, unreachable. Help me in saving my family, and all our worldly goods will be yours." Aspen thought Jiminy was laying it on a bit thick, as all actors seem to do when given a chance, but the guard stepped out of the door, closing and locking it behind him. "Fine then, woman, but you'd best be having a fair amount of them worldly goods." The guard laughed coarsely as he dropped into a slow jog, following the sounds of a woman he'd never find. Following that rather attention-grabbing performance, the three hiding in the house held as still and silent as possible for what seemed forever. Finally, Tessel, no doubt using her magical traveler's clock, whispered softly. 5 minutes. Long enough? Aspen reached out with his life sense, finding that no one within his most distant senses seemed to be awake and paying attention. He did realize, however, that there was a disconcerting lack of information coming from the guardhouse itself. He could discern the usual small lives in the front of the building, behind the door, rodents, insects, even one of Silas' small kin resting in the cramped attic. After that, however, it was as if he hit a wall of silence. Nothing alive seemed to exist within the building after that first room. He murmured to his companions. Seems to be. Something is blocking me from being able to tell if the building is empty, though. It's at the edge of my range, but I should be able to sense something. The two shadows that were his friends nodded silently, and Vaughn led the way through the building to the front door. There they paused as Aspen made one more mental sweep of the area before nodding. The three of them moved out of the building. Vaughn was hidden by his version of stealth, which was, as Aspen had mentioned, hampered by the debuffs wood elves took in cities. A faint flicker surrounded him as he moved, though when he was still, his concealment was nearly perfect. Plus, unlike Rouge's skill, which focused primarily on hiding her movements, he was also utterly silent, and Aspen knew no scent would betray his presence either. Aspen simply depended on the cover of darkness, as well as his long stride and high agility, to get him unnoticed across the street. Tessel, however, managed it by using her traveler's gifts to change into a daring black gown that seemed more shadow than fabric. The long train flowed behind her like water, and the design of the dress was utterly unsuitable for their current activity, except that it was dark and far quieter than her usual armor. When she joined the two men, she shrugged one suddenly bare and surprisingly attractive shoulder. "Boss dropped," she murmured nearly inaudibly. "Lots of buffs but looks stupid." Aspen, for his part, thought that the young traveler looked lovely, though it certainly wasn't his place to say so, especially since he'd killed her once in another lifetime. Relationships with travelers were so confusing. Unlocking the door without a thief wasn't as difficult as Aspen had feared. He could, of course, have simply melted and reshaped it, as he had once done with the manacles holding Manuela prisoner, but they were trying to be subtle. He hadn't wanted to tell Rouge since she clearly enjoyed lockpicking, but he was fairly certain that. Click. Aspen stood from his crouch, holding the large worm he'd pocketed from the garden after talking to Rouge that afternoon. He'd kept it in a pouch of moist earth, and had been feeding it mana for hours. The thing was closer to small snake-sized by now, but retained its slimy coating and ability to form itself to the shape of its container. In this case, a keyhole. A worm's senses weren't particularly sharp, but even it could tell when something moved and when it didn't. Once he'd placed the little creature into the opening of the fortunately quite large keyhole, it had wriggled inside. It didn't care for the cold sharpness of the lock's metal surface, but Aspen had been sending it mental images of what he needed it to do as he fed it. It had quickly wriggled in, then pushed against the parts of the lock that moved. Two simple pins later, the latch clicked open, and Aspen retrieved the worm, sending it warm thanks along with an extra large chunk of mana as he slipped it back into his pouch. Tessel's eyebrows shot up as he gently pushed the door open, motioning for Vaughn, as the only party member who was in stealth, to enter the room first. As the elf slipped in, Tessel switched back into her armor, quietly asking, "How did you do that?" "I have some basic lockpicking and a magical lockpick." She held out a softly gleaming silver pick. "I was going to offer to do it." Aspen laughed under his breath. "Those are single use, are they not? This worked well enough. The door is open." Vaughn's soft whistle sounded the all clear, and Aspen and Tessel slipped through the door, closing and locking it behind them. Fortunately, the inside lock was on a large metal handle, so getting out quickly if they needed to do so should be easy enough, but if a guard returned too soon, the loud sound of the lock should give them some warning. Well, that and Aspen's life sense, though he feared that when they entered the silent zone beyond the door he could see across the room, but not sense at all, he would then be cut off from this area. The room looked like enough to guardhouses that Aspen had seen in his previous life. A desk sat in the center, with messy stacks of scrolls on it, ready to receive citizen complaints. Beside the desk was a trash bin, full to overflowing with similar scrolls, though these were covered in sloppy letters and ink spots. Two very uncomfortable-looking wooden chairs, with short legs and hard, narrow seats, sat to one side. Dust gleamed on them faintly. Clearly, this guardhouse received few visitors who stayed long enough to sit. A ring of keys hung in plain view on a hook by the far door, likely left there by the vanished guard in case his brethren returned before he did. Aspen glanced over at Vaughn, who was already looking through the desk, though so far it seemed he'd found nothing beyond a tattered feather pen and a half-empty pot of ink. "Did you check for traps?" The elf glanced up, then sighed and shrugged. "I can find traps in the wild, snares, deadfalls, cages, things like that. These dart and gas traps you city dwellers seem to prefer are different, and more difficult for me. I simply hope that since this is in a semi-public area, and these guards seem lax, that they wouldn't want to have to disarm a trap every time they needed to write a note. Aspen shook his head, but couldn't really argue. He'd known sending their rogue with the other group was a risk, and frankly it probably would have been better to bring one of Plum's budding young cutpurses, but Rouge had the best chance of infiltrating the cult, and he couldn't countenance placing a child at unnecessary risk. At least he, as their healer, was here, as was Tessel, with a traveler's seemingly bottomless bag of tricks. The three of them made short work of the small room, even turning the dusty chairs upside down and looking beneath them. Aspen quickly read through the notes in the trash, most of which were nothing more interesting than lunch orders, though a few seemed to be desultory notes regarding complaints made by locals. Near the bottom, he pulled out a particularly crumpled page and skimmed the contents.
"Hem.
Bon, where exactly did your sister live?" The elf was beside him in a flash, though his eyebrows drew down as he struggled to read the note in Aspen's hands. Finally, he growled a little. "You humans and your bizarre language. Why don't your letters look like the things they represent? What does it say?" Aspen traced a finger down the parchment. "It looks like someone came to make a report after your family was taken. Or perhaps it was another family with the same situation. It says the husband and father were found." He grimaced at the description and edited it down to "murdered," and that a woman and child were missing. The address given is at the intersection of Tannery and Scud, which is where Leonard and George lived, I believe. The report was given by a Mavis Little, who says she lives a block down Scud. She used to go to the market with the woman, who she calls Violet, but suddenly Violet stopped coming to the fountain. She made the report because no one seemed to be looking for the missing people. Bon snatched the page from Aspen's hand, gray eyes frantic as he tried again to read the foreign language. "My sister's name is Violetta. We must find this Mavis woman and question her further." Aspen grimaced and tapped the bottom of the page. "Here it says, measures taken. Case closed. We'll certainly look for Mavis, but I suspect that we'll find she herself has either gone missing or she won't speak to us. As a friend of your sister and someone who cared enough to try to find her, I doubt you want to bring further trouble on her by trying to force her to talk, if she even can." Bon crumpled the page in his hand, then punched the desk so hard Aspen could see a hairline fracture form in one of his finger bones. Gently, he touched the back of the young man's hand, sending Gina a mental prayer to relieve the pain and repair the injury. Bon sighed, hand relaxing beneath Aspen's, and lowered his head in relief. The two men turned as they heard a soft, "Oh?" They looked over at Tessel, who was staring at them, hands clasped in front of her, eyes huge and glimmering. "That was so sweet. I'm totally shipping you two now." The half-dwarf practically cooed, and Von jumped back, nearly snatching his hand from beneath Aspen's. Aspen just chuckled, reflecting once again on what a strange lot the travelers were. After a few more moments of fruitless search, the three turned their gazes to the ring of keys by the inner door. Aspen sighed. "I have no idea what's in there," he warned, "not for the first time." Bon nodded determinedly, and Tessel just shrugged resignedly. "Probably something to keep mages from casting spells while they're in confinement." "Makes sense, really, R3D," she cut her former beau's name short. "I mean, some people I used to know said that if you get arrested, you can't get out until you've done your time or paid your fine. No cheating and picking the lock or blasting your way out, you know?" Aspen stepped closer and concentrated on the hook, the keys, and the wall. He could sense the surface of the wall, and even part of a mouse family living inside. But one mouse was little more than a sense of smell, a whisper of life, as most of the creature was apparently within the blocking force. Aspen was aware that he was becoming too reliant on his magic, especially since he knew that unnatural creatures such as the swineherd, as well as thieves like Rouge, who had a high enough stealth skill, were essentially invisible to him. Nonetheless, it made him nervous to know that he was likely about to return to having only his own physical senses on which to depend. Bon, clearly impatient, hooked the keys down from the wall and began trying them in the door. Tessel reached past him and pushed. When the door swung open, she shrugged. "Who locks the door when they're the only person here?" The elf snorted agreement and dropped into stealth. Less than a second later, he reappeared with one foot over the threshold. He laughed a little at their looks. "Worth a try." Since there was no possibility of sneaking into the back area, the three simply walked through the door, closing and locking it behind them. If the guards came back before they were done, there was no chance of concealing their presence, so they might as well slow any pursuit. Aspen looked around. They were in a small open space with two doors on each side, as well as three barred cells on the far side of the room. On the principle that whatever was in the cells would keep, but if there were enemies in any of the rooms they needed to know, they began opening doors. The first door on the left turned out to be a storage closet. There were a few pieces of dirty or damaged armor in a pile on the floor, and two very basic iron swords laid on a shelf. Beside them rested four of the dull and apparently worthless knives that the maskers used to communicate the locations of non-humans. Aspen picked each one up and looked at it. The first three were indistinguishable from each other, but the fourth had crusted black flakes caught between the grip and the blade. On closer examination, he was unsurprised to find that the flakes were dried blood, though they definitely seemed to be black, not just dark rust red. When he touched his tongue to one of the flakes, the taste of iron and salt were distinctive. Tessel choked behind him, and he turned around, finding the traveler woman watching him with a disgusted expression on her face. "How can you taste that?" He gave her a crooked grin. "Blood and I are old friends, I'm afraid. As a healer and as a necromancer, I've never had the time to indulge in squeamishness." She shook her head, looking faintly green. "Won't it make you sick?" She waved a hand helplessly. "Give you a disease debuff or something?" Aspen carefully laid the weapon back on the shelf. "No, though that's a possibility when dealing with certain beasts or infected people. Mostly, I should be able to cure that kind of thing." Not for the first time, he tried to use his mana, feeling like a man with a sore tooth, prodding the painful spot with his tongue. "Though I admit that would be difficult at the moment." Vaughn, who had been looking through the rest of the room while they talked, interrupted. "There's nothing else here. Some bread and cheese, empty water skins, cleaning supplies that look brand new." Tessel twitched a bit, then cleared her throat and asked, "So, can I take this stuff? I mean, they're going to know someone was in here, right? So there's no point trying to leave things the way they were." Aspen rubbed his chin. "I guess so. The weapons and armor won't be worth much, though." Even as he spoke, the items vanished into the traveler's inventory. "That's okay," the half-dwarf said cheerfully. "Every little bit counts." The other three rooms yielded similar results. One was a break room, with several decks of cards and dice on a rough wooden table. Two were clearly offices, but though they went over every piece of paper they found, as well as two books that looked like records of expenditures, one of which was hidden beneath the larger desk and which Aspen suspected was probably the real version, they found nothing obviously helpful. Tessel stored everything away so that they could go over it more thoroughly later. All of this took only 20 minutes or so, and they found themselves back out in the central room, looking at the barred doors. Two of the cell doors were ajar, but a silent lump lay in the back corner of the center cell. It hadn't moved since they entered, despite the noise they had made. After a brief exchange of looks, Vaughn headed for the door. There were seven keys on the ring, and the fifth one opened the door. The lump still didn't stir. Tessel, as the party member best able to take damage, entered the small space. Her short, wide body took up most of the area, and it took only two steps to reach the bundle. Cautiously, she nudged it with her heavy sabaton. "Hey," she said softly, clearly trying not to frighten whoever or whatever might be held prisoner in this place. However, there was no response, and she nudged harder. Something rasped like dry leaves within the bundle, and part of it flopped over. It was a sleeve, and the arm within was little more than a shell of dried skin and bones. In a flash, Aspen was through the cell door, on his knees beside the desiccated corpse, which seemed to be of a woman, judging only by the long brown hair on the dry scalp stretched taut over the skull. A worn copper band slid from one dry finger, rolling across the floor to come to rest against Vaughn's boot. With a cry, the young elf leaned down to scoop it up in trembling fingers. It was a frail thing, tarnished a brownish green, and probably left a similar color on the finger of the person who wore it. Obviously, in spite of its lack of monetary value, the woman before them had treasured it. Now Vaughn clutched at it, tears beginning to run down his cheeks as he rubbed the patina from the inside surface, leaving a green smear on his thumb. "Violette," he murmured in a choked voice. "Beloved," it means. Violetta's true name in our language. "My mother couldn't afford much. We're not allowed to gain worldly goods while on Arnspiga, and must leave anything we do own behind when we return. Mother bought this for her child before she left, and told her to wear it always, and someday we would find her again." He looked up, gray eyes haunted. "This was my sister. What happened to her? Aspen raised his head, his topaz eyes ice cold. Vampires,